Welcome to Reinventing Professionals, a podcast hosted by industry analyst Ari Kaplan, which shares ideas, guidance, and perspectives from market leaders shaping the next generation of legal and professional services.
This is Ari Kaplan, and I'm speaking today with David Cohen, a partner with Reed Smith and chair of the firm's Records and eDiscovery Group, as well as a member of the Emerging Technologies Group. And Ross Guberman, the founder and CEO of LawCatch, the developer of BriefCatch, a software platform designed to elevate legal writing, which has recently introduced new generative AI features for lawyers and legal professionals. Ross, Dave, great to speak with you.
Likewise.
Great to be here.
Dave, tell us about your background and your practice at Reed Smith.
Oh, I came out of law school and joined a big firm and immediately went into litigation. Dad was a trial lawyer, so I always wanted to be a lawyer and try cases, and I did that for a number of years. As time went on, the cases got more and more document intensive, and discovery became a bigger and bigger part of litigation, and I started specializing in that. I always had an interest in computers, so even before the era of e-discovery, we started to computerize information about the old hard copy documents. We would get them manually coded and put them on computers. I was involved in several mega cases where I was put in charge of that. So that naturally led me into eDiscovery when eDiscovery came along. And I started for one of the first eDiscovery practice groups at a major law firm, and then subsequently established Reed Smith's eDiscovery practice group, which has now grown to about 80 lawyers full-time, so it's a big group. And as eDiscovery kept getting bigger, it gobbled up the rest of my litigation practice. So now, instead of eDiscovery being a hobby and litigation being my main work, now eDiscovery is my main work. And I occasionally get into court and write briefs, but generally just about eDiscovery issues these days.
Ross, after practicing for several years, what inspired you to transition into a career in technology and to develop BriefCatch?
So I did workshops on legal writing and judicial writing all over the world for 17 years. And just as legal tech was starting to take off, and it really was back then, mainly eDiscovery, a lot of the people who followed my teachings were asking about having some kind of tool or macro that would really help them remember all the tips and tricks and apply them. So I actually decided to take the plunge and create BriefCatch, and it launched in 2018.
Dave, you helped develop Reed Smith's eDiscovery app, which was launched in 2020, and lead its ongoing development among other innovation initiatives. Why do more lawyers like Ross seem to be focused on creating rather than simply using technology tools?
Probably starts out as self-interest to make our lives easier. So Ross probably got tired of doing all that the hard way and teaching people when he developed some software to help them. And similarly, my phone was constantly ringing and people wanted a form of a legal hold notice or a sample protective order, what have you. So my first step was to create a hard copy eDiscovery manual, which we copied and sent to all the 1,000 copies to all the litigators and paralegals in my firm. But then we were constantly updating it and printing updates and inserts. And when apps came along, we figured, hey, we don't have to wait for annual updates. We could update in real time. We can make this available not only to our fellow colleagues at our law firm, but also directly to our clients, because we get these requests from clients as well. And while we're at it, maybe there's some other good forms out there that the rest of the eDiscovery community would share. And maybe we should just make this available as a resource to the whole world. Appreciate the opportunity to promote the app, and any of your listeners who are in the eDiscovery world can download it for free. We charge nothing for it, or there's nothing you can pay for on it. And it's downloadable from the App Store or the Google Play Store. Just search for eDiscovery app. And it just keeps growing in terms of the resources available: forms, indexes, solution provider directory, special masters, access to the federal rules, plus the rules of all 50 states. It's got a lot of great and even international resources. I think everybody will find something useful on the app if you practice in the litigation or eDiscovery.
I'm actually curious, Dave, do you find that firms that have these practice-specific apps are doing them solely in-house, or are they outsourcing some of the coding and UI UX design?
We actually signed up with a company that builds these apps. I shouldn't say build, they give you the platform. So it's a do-it-yourself situation. And that saved us a lot of time. We didn't have to know at coding, although we do have some people, obviously, in the firm who know how to code for apps. But I think it did streamline the process. So once we had that eDiscovery manual already set up, turning that into an app was a matter of weeks rather than months. Now we continue to learn about new features available technologically, and we've put in some fancier features as the app has grown, including searchable databases and things like that. But the first step was to use one of these existing platforms, and that made it all a lot easier and faster.
Ross, as a developer of legal technology, Dave was just talking about needing to consistently update certain resources. How do you ensure that your tools are evolving with the needs of your users?
It's incredible nowadays, if you own software, how much data you can get on your user requests, user behavior, new users you don't even have, and what they might like. And it's also really easy to, if you have the right technology, to just constantly update it, you know, almost day to day. I guess the next step is letting particular clients customize software for their own needs and let them update it as well. As time goes on, actually, Dave gave this perfect example. You have this, you don't want to reinvent the wheel. I hear a lot of law firms investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in things I know actually exist and could have been adapted for $5,000. You don't want to reinvent the wheel, but it will be increasingly easy as time goes on to customize a lot of these tools as we do here at Brief Catch.
Dave, given the complexity of the litigation you manage in your practice, how do you incorporate technology to remain as current as possible despite the rapid nature of change in legal?
It's not optional, especially if you're in a field like e-discovery that seems to be on the forefront, as Ross noted. There are a lot of e-discovery conferences, and I'm fortunate enough to get invited to speak at a number of them. I attend a lot of these conferences, and it's both an opportunity for me to remain up to speed on the latest e-discovery law. And by the way, there's no better way to learn something than being forced to present, but also these same e-discovery conferences where we have educational programs, the vendor shop, that's where they come to meet with the lawyers and the in-house corporate people to show off the newest technology. So it's a great opportunity for us to stay abreast, looking at new products, vetting them, seeing demos, and trying to keep up to date on the latest, particularly all the new generative AI that's now coming down the pike. We can't afford to fall behind. We want to remain at the forefront of using technology to be efficient, keep costs down, and deliver the best quality for clients.
Ross, given your work with the judges around the world, how do good writing and well-crafted positions affect the outcomes of Bet the Company Matters?
Judges during the pandemic started reading briefs and motions on iPads, and that has actually endured, and it has changed the way that they process these arguments. So more than ever, there's a real premium on being incisive, concise, and really controlled on the first page or two, because frankly, a lot of courts are now doing a lot more skimming. And also because they're reading briefs on devices, it's much easier for them to go back and forth between the parties' filings and not feel compelled to read things straight through. So the good part of this is it's also a great opportunity to really stand out from the masses of pretty good but not great writers. If you have the right technology or the right skills or both, to really hone your points and make them practically just jump off the page, or as it were, jump off the iPad.
Dave, you've served as a court-appointed e-discovery special master in several cases, including those involving patents, civil rights, criminal matters. Have you seen a change in the way lawyers communicate and prepare their pleadings?
Yes. One thing as a special master that I always tried to do was make things as easy and efficient as possible for the litigants. For example, instead of having parties prepare formal briefs on matters, I let them prepare email briefs, and they could start out with a short communications if they wanted to. And if I wanted more on something, I would let them know. And then instead of just issuing decisions, I would have meetings where we would talk about things, and I would tell them where I'm leaning, and they would have a chance to tell me why I'm wrong or to file supplemental things. But we would streamline the whole process. So what might have taken months of briefing and reply briefs and then scheduled oral argument and lots of preparations. If it was before the court, I might be able to do in a week or two with some email briefing and more interactions with the other side, which would actually save them time and resulted in the decisions weren't any surprise. And very few of them have been appealed to the court after I've given them. So I think that was real positive. Now, I haven't had anybody, because of the timing of those cases, nobody was using generative AI in preparing their pleadings to me. But today we're seeing attorneys, including in my own firm, we're starting to look at generative AI and can that speed us up in terms of preparing briefs and pleadings. You certainly don't want to make the mistake that's made the news for a number of unfortunate attorneys in the last year, where they used generative AI and then didn't check the generative AI's results. And as a result, they cited fake cases because generative AI hallucinates. So no, it's not a replacement for human writers, but it is a tool that can help human writers improve. It's similar to what Ross is doing now and give you a head start or even give you a second read. You can write a brief and ask ChatGPT or another tool, use one that don't give away any private information. But if it's something you're going to file publicly, have them summarize it for you and see if your main points are getting across in the summary. That can help you improve the brief or see how it would draft portions of the brief. Just don't trust it to replace your own research. You've got to check anything that it provides.
Ross, how has BriefCatch evolved to help lawyers navigate this accelerated docket?
To pick up on something Dave was just talking about, we're now moving into some really exciting territory involving logic, logical gaps, tone, consistency of message, and not just consistency of wording. So there are a lot of really innovative ways you can use the right kind of technology as a sort of check and even inspiration on your own work, even if you're not striving to use it to replace your work. So that's really our next chapter. But even our existing tool gives people who have done the hard work of thinking through their points and going through a first draft a lot of resources instantly and reliably to really fine-tune their messaging, get their wording just right. And then it also prompts you often to just think a little bit more carefully about what points you're really trying to make. One of the things BriefCatch tries to flag is fluffy or ambiguous language. And instead of telling you what you want to say, it gives you 6 or 7 reasonable, viable options and lets you choose. So all of that can help beleaguered attorneys meet a lot of deadlines, including client deadlines and court deadlines, and really bring out their best writing.
Dave, do litigators need more technology to support their clients?
Absolutely. I think Ross just covered the two things that you can get from technology. You can get better results and you can get faster results. And that means you can get more done. Your clients are paying less money for you, so you gain a competitive advantage over the competition. And we've really seen that in the field of e-discovery, where the volumes of data keep growing, but we are managing to control costs because of the evolutions in technology. So today, we can review and be ready to produce a 1 million document universe for a cost that used to be the cost for 200,000 documents. Predictive coding keeps improving, early case assessment and filtering keep improving, and that allows us to be more efficient. Technology is one of the few areas where prices don't go up on a per document basis. The prices have gone down, prices of dealing with all the masses of information that are out there. And that's especially important because that information just keeps proliferating and growing. So we've got to do something to keep it under control.
I actually have a question for you, Dave, since you've served yourself as a special master. There's talk out there that in 2, 3, 4 years, you'll have AI special masters, AI magistrates, who are literally AI tools that look at various party submissions and then render a verdict. And I was just curious if you think that's feasible, that we would actually have AI judges, at least for things like e-discovery disputes.
Personally, I think that day is coming. In fact, I'm writing a short story about that as we speak. I don't think that we're going to accept them in place of human judges initially. I think they're going to start out as judges' assistants. Maybe they come up with a draft decision, and then the judge sees it and evaluates it. And one of the nice things where some of the AI is going is it doesn't just give you the draft, but it gives you the reference citations, can tell you which documents it's relying on and coming up with these conclusions. So I think it can speed up the decision-making process and help judges, but we're going to have to see it perform as well or better than judges for some period of time before people are going to be willing to accept it as a complete substitute for human judges. But that day's probably coming too, just a little bit further down the pike.
One of Malcolm Gladwell's recent books talks about a study that showed that computer algorithms do a better job of predicting whether criminal defendants on bail are going to repeat crimes than actual judges did. So that might be a little, maybe you can weave that into your story. That's really a really fascinating study, if you think about it. Apparently, human judges were way too influenced by sociopathic defendants who were coached on what to say to sound remorseful. And the AI version was not responsive to that kind of tactic. So I thought it was pretty interesting.
Certainly, there's advantages and disadvantages. There may be biases that creep in with AI as well that don't creep in with judges. There's been some research then on some of those bail decisions that relate to the chance of recidivism and some of the sentencing decisions that AI has taken into account factors that may be proxies for race or other prohibitive factors like zip code or socioeconomic status. So we've got to be very careful when we're relying on artificial intelligence to make sure that it's not creating bias. Ideally, it would be less biased than human judges, but we can't just assume that's going to be the case without carefully monitoring.
Yeah, that's right. And even if you train the AI on even a mass of actual judges' decisions, you might just be replicating bias.
Absolutely. Might be training it to be biased.
Russ, what new opportunities can law firms realize with artificial intelligence?
So one new opportunity would be to try to figure out ways your particular firm is distinctive, or your partners have a special gloss on writing or on a topic. One of the things we're trying to do right now is make firm-specific brief catches so we can actually figure out the partners at most law firms don't all write the same way, believe me, but there actually are some patterns at some firms. Even at the word level, the partners as a group do things a little bit more, a little bit less than partners at other firms. So there's a lot of value in that, not just in the sense of having institutional knowledge about your firm's own practices, but think about new associates coming to a firm and you'd actually be able to say, this is how we write, or this is how we approach memos, right? Or this is how we approach client alerts. So that I think is really exciting. And then the other thing really good, especially when it comes to associates and all the problems right now with morale and retention, is because it's the Generation Z in particular, they don't really like formal training, which is what I used to do. I used to go to firms like Reed Smith and do these three-hour programs. If you have the right kind of legal tech, in addition to solving client problems, you can actually train associates on the job, which is what they prefer, and actually ramp up their skills at the same time.
Dave, how do you see law firms taking advantage of AI-empowered tools for litigators and practitioners going forward?
I think there's some very exciting opportunities coming down the pike. And we've always tried to take advantage of old work product. I mean, even before everything was computerized, when I was a young associate, if I was asked to do an assignment, brief this issue, or write this kind of motion, the first thing I would try to do is find a firm, somebody who's done something like that in the past, so I had a model. Now, all of that is automated, and you could feed into AI, for example, past work product of your firm. Got to be careful because, again, you can't give away any client information inadvertently, but you have a much more efficient way to get started. And we've been testing a number of these tools, and some of them are just amazing with generative AI capabilities. For example, you could ask the Gen AI to come up with the first draft of a memorandum, and you might be 50% of the way there and save 50% of the associate time that would have taken to do that. Certainly, I'm also excited about the way generative AI is being added to a lot of discovery tools now. And you're in a position now where there's some tools you could just feed in a million documents without reviewing them yet, just ask questions and have AI answer those questions. What did person A say to person B about this project during this period of time? What were their communications? In 1 minute, you can get a summary of all of those communications. So there's tremendous potential. That's just touching the tip of the iceberg. And we're going to see more and more ways that AI can save time and improve results for litigators and really all kinds of attorneys.
This is Ari Kaplan speaking with David Cohen, a partner with Reed Smith and chair of the firm's Records and eDiscovery Group, as well as a member of the Emerging Technologies Group, and Ross Guberman, the founder and CEO of Lawcatch, the developer of Briefcatch, a software platform designed to elevate legal writing, which has recently introduced new generative AI features for lawyers and legal professionals. Ross, Dave, it's been a privilege. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ari.
Thanks, Ari.
Thank you for listening to the Reinventing Professionals podcast. Visit reinventingprofessionals.com or arikaplanadvisors.com to learn more.